Welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast with Scott McKenzie. Scott is a passionate industry professional dedicated to transferring cutting-edge, industry-focused innovations and trends while highlighting the men and women who keep the world moving. So put on your hard hat, grab your work boots, and let's go.
All right, welcome to the Industrial Talk Podcast, the number one industrial-related podcast in the universe. That is my story. And if you're watching us out on the old video, we are broadcasting from Cleveland, Ohio. Can you believe that? Broadcasting from Cleveland, Ohio. And it's live for me, and it's not live for you. Once again, this platform, this Industrial Talk platform, is dedicated to you, the industrial and manufacturing professionals. You are the individuals that are bold, brave, you dare greatly, you're changing the world, you innovate, you're making my life better, which I appreciate. That's why we celebrate you on this particular podcast. All right, again, from Cleveland, an incredible manufacturing base here, an incredible professional. I mean, it's just a stable full of professionals. That's what it is. It's just the bottom line. We've got a great interview with a gentleman by the name of Andy McCartney. What are you? You're the founder? No, you're not the founder. You are the president. You're the bigwig.
Sure.
Of Bowden. The bigwig of Bowden.
Yeah, manufacturing. We started back in 52. I haven't been here that long.
It got a head of hair.
Yeah.
All right, let's get this thing shown on the road. All right, you listeners. You know that I'm always talking about a number of things. One, you need to collaborate. You need to collaborate, innovate. You need to, right, educate. You need to do it with a sense of speed. You need to make mistakes, do it again, collaborate, innovate, educate, and so on and so forth. That's what we're committed to. And Andy, we had a great tour of his wonderful organization, and the first thing that pops out is they're busy. You guys are busy. Seems like you're busy. I know a lot of things were spinning and squirting.
Yeah, no, it's good to be in a loud chat.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I like that. All right, I like that. And it was a lot of unique products that are being developed and manufactured out there. And we'll get into the topic. But what I did notice is that you've got a team of just young, you know, bright professionals. It's pretty incredible. Before we get into that now, Andy, give us a little 411 on who you are and what you're all about, and then we're going to get into Bowden Manufacturing.
So I grew up in northeastern Ohio. I had two brothers, an older brother, younger brother, and somehow we all ended up in the Navy. My older brother went to the Naval Academy. I ended up there behind him, and my younger brother went to the Air Force Academy. So we all...
Do you guys have sort of interesting conversations around the table about which academy's better?
Well, we do, except that my younger brother then cross-commissioned to the Navy, so we were on the Navy, so we kind of figured he saw the light and figured it out.
But
we were all nuke surface guys, so we all served on aircraft carriers at one time. My older brother's still in. He's going to retire at the end of this year. He's down at the Pentagon in D.C. right now. But so when I got out, I married a local girl, and we already had a couple kids when my choice to stay in or get out, and so I got out and came home. So got out of the Navy in 98, came home. We now have three daughters that are all graduated from high school. One's still in college, and so we're adjusting to the empty nest life. Came back home and started with my dad, kind of learning the family business.
So that's interesting because military career, doggone an academy grad, into the military. And then all of a sudden you say, hey, I'm ready to get out of the military and I'm going to work with my dad. And Bowden Manufacturing, did you have some sort of, did you work with your dad prior to the academy? And so did you have some idea about what this is all about?
Not really, although he and I had a really good relationship where he was always very frank with me. And I think we're very similar creatures. I was telling you, he was always very ritualistic, and that's certainly part of my personality. My kids would tell you that right away.
You can't be sloppy out there. You can't manufacture parts and be sloppy.
We had a good relationship, and I knew it was kind of the once in a lifetime opportunity to be able to spend time with him. So we had about 10 years. He passed away in 2009 from cancer, but we had a good 10 years working together and learning the business. And he, to his credit, pretty early on, it was clear that, I was going to enjoy it and stay. And the only thing that I kind of really brought out of the Navy from an applicability standpoint was the leadership, right? I mean, just you have a bunch of guys. I had a division on the ship. And so coming back here, I had learned that when you show up at a new ship, and you don't know anything, and you can either say, hey, it's my way or the highway, and that gets one response, or you can ask a lot of questions and try and learn as much as you can. And they all knew when I showed up with the same last name as the guy in the corner office that I was probably going to be here for a while and in some sort of position that they might see me for a while. And so, you know, but I asked a lot of questions to try to learn what was going on here. And you know, when you ask good questions and you got good folks that want to give answers and you're not trying to force anything down their throat, they tend to help you figure out what's going on. And so I would tell them when I showed up at a ship, you know, hey, give me a couple months and I might be useful to you. And so getting here, you know, I had already done that several times going to new ships. And so it was just another new ship. When you're in at the Academy and in the Navy as an officer, you know, the brainwashing is kind of, you want to take command of something. Right. And my older brother was a couple years ahead of me, and I used to kid him, I got my command first because I got out of the Navy and came in and got to take command of the company. And he had three ships later, so he got his chance too. But it was fun to get out and come apply some of those leadership lessons that I learned back in the Navy and
now,
use them here.
Did your dad say, okay, son, here's a mop, go mop it up over there? And I mean, did you start from the, I mean, how did you learn? I mean, come on, there's some sophisticated stuff that's happening out there. And I guarantee you, if you came to me and said, all right, Scott, jump on that CNC machine and I want you to produce this discronificator and it looks like this, go for it. I guarantee you, it ain't going to happen and you're going to be disappointed.
Well, now, first of all, Scott, you do pretty good pretty quick, I'm sure. But when I first got here,
thank you very much.
I have a cousin who has a shop that's about 20 minutes from here. And so I spent 6 weeks where I would go there at 6 o'clock in the morning and I would work his first shift. And then I would come back and spend the last 2.5 hours here before I went home. And there I didn't have the same last name as the guy in the corner office.
Right.
And I spent a couple days in each department and I was just running machines, trying to figure out, hey, what's going on in a CNC world where I don't have the guys on the floor there just treated me like another guy who had showed up. So they weren't trying to couch right, their words right. or stuff because they were worried about what I was going to do later. And then after that 6 weeks, I had an uncle who has a place down in Solon, and I spent 4 weeks there doing the same thing. And so, you know, having just enough knowledge to understand what was going on and appreciation for what the guys go through, and yet not feeling like, okay, I know what this is like to be a machinist on third shift for, you know, a decade.
Right.
And so getting an awareness of what was happening, it really mostly helped me ask better questions around, hey, what if we tried this? And most of the time when I would ask a question, it wasn't the right thing that I was suggesting, but it would cause them to think a little differently, and then they'd come up with a better answer.
Yeah, I love that. See, the fascinating part about manufacturing is that there's never you never reach that whatever. There's always room for more improvement, better ways of doing something, being more efficient, and so on and so forth. And a different point of view is always and should be always welcomed. It's like, yeah, I get it, man. I that's different. I didn't think about that. It happens to me all the time because, well, you know, I talk to really smart people.
There you go.
You know, I'm learning all the time. I'm pretty smart right now. All right, let's just sort of address right now the unfortunate elephant in the room, the two-fingered death punch we call COVID. How has your business sort of adapted to that?
Well, we early on, I mean, so we do a lot of Defense Department work. So we were part of that essential group of companies that got to continue operating the whole time. And early on, obviously, there was a lot of our folks who were really nervous. And so a number of them spent time, just took their time off, took their vacation. Obviously, it was pretty early in the year, so a bunch of them still had vacation. And, you know, some are still dealing with childcare issues as a result. But customer side, our aerospace business, I mean, we're an aerospace certified AS9100 company. And so a chunk of our work is aerospace. And that took a pretty immediate nosedive because there's not a whole lot of flying going on even today still. So it's that industry has hurt. We anticipated that the defense industry, we would see some pickup in 2008-09. It was pretty busy because Uncle Sam was trying to stimulate the economy. And it seems this time there was more kind of the cash payouts to people, and instead of buying stuff, they were just kind of giving money away. And so certainly the PPP stuff was a helpful thing, because trying to keep our staff here and engaged. And we definitely saw a dip in March and April were both definitely slower months for us. We were down 24% and 26% those two months. And then June, we finally bounced back. And July, we've seen some ups and downs in a couple different customers. We're small enough, so we're $8 to $9 million machine shop. And so, you know, a couple individual customers, when they slow down, you know, we feel it pretty directly, and it has a larger impact on us. But all in all, I mean, we adjusted to the protocols, the cleaning protocols. And the irony is when the rest of the manufacturing was able to come back is when we had to start wearing masks and stuff, because the first 7 weeks, there wasn't really mask stuff going on. We were social distance and on the shop floor and doing a lot of cleaning, Clorox wiping down and stuff. But by and large, I mean, you know, you adjust to the new reality and kind of settle in. I think the last month or so, where the mask orders have been extended and that's it's starting to wear on all of us. We were working a good amount of overtime kind of going into this, and so that's pretty much gone away, although I expect that in the coming weeks we'll start bumping a little bit of that up again on an as-needed basis.
I gotta tell you, when I walked out on that shop floor, it seemed busy. I mean, it was noisy.
Yeah.
And you had a lot of individuals doing stuff,
right,
which is good.
No,
nobody was just standing around, just sort of, hey, look at me, I'm moving a brush. Hey, look at me shaving. No, they were actually doing some stuff, which then let's translate into that. One of the challenges and one of the things, fortunately for me, I get to talk to a lot of leaders like yourself. And some of the interesting themes that have come as a result of these conversations have been, one, how do I retain talent, right? I still need to get the work done. It might be down, but I still need to get the work done. And I need to maintain the quality. I need to do that. So how do I retain quality talent? How do I manage my risk? How do I either eliminate or build a wall around it, some way of managing it? Save money, right? And make money, of course. And then create a business that in this time becomes more future resilient. You know, whether it happens or not, whatever, we know it is what it is, but you don't want to have to go through that again. And so what I've noticed out on the floor is that you are the oldest guy on the floor. So you have a lot of youth, and these individuals, these youthful individuals, are handling big machines and taking care of impressive stuff. What's the theory behind that?
Well, first of all, I'm maybe the oldest guy you saw, but there's a couple other guys who know a lot of stuff out there that have me by a few years.
Okay, so listeners, note that. He's a little sensitive to his age.
There you go. Hey, I'm about to hit the big 5-0. This is big territory.
Tack to that, Handy.
There you go. Right. So we've done, in the last 5 years, we started doing some recruiting of interns. Back 5 years ago, we had some business interns that came in, and we'd always start them out and spend a couple weeks on the shop floor. And the business kids enjoyed that part, because, I mean, you could see the end of your workday that you had done something, and it was kind of a game to figure out how to make those parts. And yet what they really wanted to do was get in on the operations side of the business. And so it was still partly an overhead kind of spend, right, to have them come in and learn business from us. They could help do some stuff. But then we started hiring engineers. And so we get engineering interns, and my pitch to them is, look, you're going to get dirty, learn how to make stuff. And so University of Akron, Cleveland State University, and Case Western Reserve are all in town. And so we now go to all their career fairs, and we recruit engineers, and we bring them in. And there's two ways that they typically come in. One is interns, where it doesn't matter after what year, and we're bringing them in, and we're not having them shadow an engineer. We're having them run machines. In fact, in their interview, they actually run machines, because we want to make sure to see if that mechanical aptitude is there. And we want to make sure there's no question that that's going to be part of their job when they show up here. And so they come in and they've really taken to it, and they learn so fast. And so for our senior guys to train these thirsty sponges looking for new information and want to understand how to do stuff, it has been really fun. And so last summer was kind of the first time we said, okay, hey, part of your rotation, you're going to spend 2 to 3 weeks on second shift and 2 to 3 weeks on third shift, because it was going to allow us to both have more of them in the building as well as provide them a little different experience. When you're on second shift or third shift, there's far fewer people who can help you solve problems and figure stuff out. And so they needed to, they would end up getting some more independence on how to fix stuff. It's a little different decision-making equation when you're not surrounded by a bunch of other people who could answer those questions. And so, you know, I was expecting a little pushback going to second and third shift, and I didn't get any because it's part of the program. So we had last summer, we had 23 kids come in, and they all spent 3 weeks on second and 3 weeks on third. And so for us, that meant doubling our second and third shift, which was huge for us from a throughput standpoint. And so every semester since then, that's kind of been the program. And so having that crew coming in, they're getting a lot out of the experience, and we're immediately, so they are not an overhead piece. They're a throughput generation piece. So they get to learn how to make stuff. And
meaning you're generating some revenue off of that individual. That's
absolutely
important. I like that.
Then the other side is we've hired graduate engineers. And so bringing them in, they go through the same front-end training, but they now spend 6 to 8 months on second and 6 to 8 months on third as a part of a four-block rotation. So two of the blocks are on first, a block on second, a block on third. And so they rotate around. Typically, they come in, get acclimated the first month or two, and then they go to the back shift. And they spend that time just learning how to be a machinist, learning how to set up the machines, change the machines over. And then when they come back for their second 6 to 8 months, now they're dealing directly with our engineers, learning projects and starting to set up new stuff. As they go back to the second and third shift for their third kind of block of 6 to 8 months, now they're part of the leadership of that shift because they're senior troubleshooters and experienced now in what they're doing. And it's a great experience for them to learn how to lead where there's not so many people around and they need to help solve problems.
Why is this important?
Well, so our senior guys aren't getting any younger, and there isn't the same, I mean, there's just a shortage of machinists out there. And so for us to be able to grow machinists on our own, and I think the other key, and it's really based in my Navy background, right? So most times when you pour energy into training somebody like that, you want to hang on to them for the rest of their lives, which the stereotypical current generation, they don't want to plan to be anywhere for the whole life, right?
That's absolutely accurate.
Right. So the opportunity to say, hey, if they come and spend 2 to 5 years with us, and then it's time for them to move on, then that's okay with us because we're going to get some good experience out of them.
Because you have a process in place that continues to backfill the youth.
Right.
And does it bring about different solutions to challenging projects?
It certainly does. And having these young kids that they don't know that, oh, you're not supposed to consider that. They are just trying to figure stuff out. And so just like I did when I first got here, you ask them off the wall questions and sometimes you're totally off base, but other times it actually is a good idea and it works. And so it's fun to see them challenge kind of the way we've always done stuff and just look for, hey, how else could we do this? Or why are we doing it this way?
See, I think that's an incredible, an absolutely a brilliant process, because some of the challenges that I've seen, and it's been manufacturing, don't get me wrong, is how do you backfill? How do you take that knowledge that decides that it wants to retire and backfill it with the same capabilities? That's an interesting. Now, the other question I want to venture into is that your willingness to sort of at least pursue sort of a digital solution when it comes to managing your production and seeing and looking at data. Why is that important to you?
Well, so one of the things, and we've struggled with this since I initially got here 21, almost 22 years ago, was how do you measure and monitor the production that's going on the shop floor? And so it's going on 3.5, 4 years ago now. We got with the guys, the name of the company is Mutt Cloud, and they have these machine utilization trackers. That's what the Mutt stands for. And so you attach them to the power input of your machine, and as the machine is running, it draws more current, so that it's just measuring the current. footprint, and then it feeds the data input up to the cloud, and then he's got a way to display it so that I could go on my phone, I could go on my laptop, my desktop, and I can see, hey, what machines are running and where the downtimes have been in the last 8 hours, and I can go back and see tons of data about it. But for us to be able to know and set a goal for what we're trying to achieve, and then have good visibility to see, hey, which machines right now are meeting their goal and which ones are behind, so that the ones that are behind, obviously that's where we want to go do some troubleshooting and see what's going on, make sure we understand why it's behind, and be able to measure what's our output today, because it's, I mean, you know, manufacturing is flying pretty fast, and to see all the different pieces, parts, and you know, to have a way to get that data on a time, I mean, a real-time basis is huge.
So that allows you to take that asset, that valuable asset, and it's just like the airline industry. If that plane is not in the air, it's not earning money. It's on the ground, and it's not. The same thing exists with your CNC. If I'm not spinning, drawing amperage, whatever the metrics might be, that's not producing money. And if it's not spinning, it's not producing money. Why? And so it cuts your... Because your visibility down dramatically. You could say, oh, why is that thing down? And then you can find out, and it might be a problem with the machine. Oh, look at the trends. It's been going down. Maybe I need more maintenance. I need to do something with that. Maybe it's a person. So you, at least the data gives you that insight into that asset to tactically do something.
Well, and the other thing, especially as you know, we leave here at between 3 and 5 o'clock, the first shift in our senior engineers, and you can see it online, and there's a couple, especially when you've got a key job or something that you know is working that needs to be done overnight, and you can check and see, hey, it's showing that it's down, and you can reach out and text that team leader, say, hey, what's going on over there? And the number of times where we've done troubleshooting because we see, hey, there's an issue going on. The other thing is when we come in the morning, it's nice to be able to have There's a report that comes from the system at 7:15 that shows, hey, what did last night do? And when you see that coming in, then any surprises you get when you get that email, say, oh, wait, MO3 just got 6 hours instead of 8 last night. It changes your approach to the shop floor, because if you find it out kind of in the privacy of your own desk and then you walk out there and you kind of have a sense of what's going on, it isn't this, oh, my gosh, what happened? Because having that surprise, you want to kind of do that before you get out to the people who've just finished their third shift working their butt off and something happened to the machine and you're up there, oh my gosh, this was supposed to run.
Right.
So it definitely, there's a number of unexpected benefits that come from having that visibility of data.
And when you were approached with this, you know, this strategy, looking at data, seeing the value in the data, when it's like, did you just sort of come up with that with yourself? Gosh, I'd like to see some data into that machine and wonder what, how did you come to that journey and say, yeah, this is where I want to go?
Well, so there's a number of groups of manufacturing organizations around, and one of them is the, in the Northeastern Ohio area, is the Alliance for Working Together. It's the AWT, and they put on different seminars and demonstrations. And in this case, we went to see a demonstration of this product being used and the opportunity to see what data, and obviously the guys that were using it were really excited to be able to see, hey, how are our machines doing as we're in the middle of the shift just looking at a screen. And so we did a trial with them. And we started feeding the data. And it was funny. We started the first 4 to 5 weeks, and we put them in, and we didn't tell anybody because we wanted to see what the baseline was. And then we said, hey, by the way, we can now, you guys can all see, hey, here's how it's doing. Well, we did see an immediate uptick because we all know that when we're being watched.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. But what's that study? I can't remember, but you're absolutely right.
But so then, I mean, it kind of settles in over time. And the important aspect for us is there's a couple ways that we use that data to help us keep aware of what's going on the shop floor and help provide incentive for our team to recognize, hey, we're paying attention and we're counting the hours because the hours translate into throughput going through the building.
Absolutely. Now, just like anything else, you're here. Where do you see it going forward? Where's that digital journey moving forward?
Well, it's interesting. There's a couple things that we've talked with the guys at MuttCloud and some of the other local kind of manufacturing and really providers of the IoT stuff, the Industrial Internet of Things. I got to get my lingo right. But you know, there's different things.
Yeah, that's IIoT.
IIoT.
Yeah,
right.
And then there's others. So yeah, just sort of like an IoT, and it would just sort of swim right through it.
But so. doing some different things with the data and being able to measure cycle counts and different things coming off the machines. We've been actually working on a plan where we can see, we have a number of long cycle machines that are run by a team of guys, and having our next step will be to have a readout where they can see the next one that's going right. to need to be loaded, so that it can help provide visibility when you've got seven or eight machines that you're monitoring and you know the next one's going to be the MO8. Well, then I can go make sure I'm on that if there's a couple of us that are kind of tasked with a larger group of machines. The other thing that we've spent some time at, and we found that our equipment, we had tried doing some cobot stuff where we have our young engineers setting up like a machine tending robot that is designed to be in the workspace, so it's not in its own kind of dedicated cell, but it's kind of plugged in front of a machine to be able to load stuff. And I expect in the next year or two we're going to get more into that, because it's definitely an opportunity to extend kind of one engineer to be able to do more things by being able to set up some of the longer running stuff to be able to do it.
That's good. So greater productivity from an individual. And that's, you know, some of the people are saying, well, what does this mean? Is it going to be costing my job? No, you're just making that individual more productive, and then making that individual focus on more important things as opposed to the mundane. And so it's a big win for so many. Now, the last question involves Northeast Ohio. Why is Northeast Ohio important for you and your company?
Well, I grew up here, so it's huge for me.
But you didn't go to you went to the academy, so we don't have to talk, you know, football.
Right. But so having so many other manufacturers in town and other services, so heat treating, anodizing, plating, and other related stamping and just other kinds of manufacturing to be able to do some of the assemblies that we do, and we take it for granted. We have some customers that are out west and they don't have the resources that we do, and their material costs are way higher. They can't do something local that we can run around the corner and get something heat treated or plated, and they can't do that. So it makes our ability
good
to
answer.
Provide a kind of a turnkey solution to a customer, especially in an area that isn't always got that available.
Yeah, see, that to me has been sort of, I don't know, it's one of those things that are just, you don't take it for granted, but I think that there could potentially be people that take it for granted that I can just go around the corner and then get the stuff there, and it's like, hey, take care of it. Got it there, no big deal, and I'll just drive it by. When I'm going home, I'm going to put it in the trunk and I'll get it to you.
Well, and the other thing for us that, as we've already talked about, is we got three great college engineering programs right in the area, right? So, I mean, Akron, Cleveland State, and Case are all within an easy drive for our teammates to come in. And so it's been a nice advantage for us.
Excellent. I like this conversation. You're pretty engaging. What is it like around your coffee table with all your brothers? Is it like this?
Not quite this.
They're energetic and excited.
We're all new guys, so we're not big on the personality like you, Scott.
All right. Are you active out on LinkedIn?
What's that? Yes.
Are you active? Good.
Yeah.
So reach out.
Will do.
Now, it's Andy, or probably Andrew out there, right? Is it Andrew?
It's probably Andrew.
Andrew McCartney, Bowden, Bowden Manufacturing is the company. Reach out to him on LinkedIn. You will not be disappointed. Or you can just go to industrialtalk.com, and I'll just give you the link. So I'll make it even easier for you. How's that? You were absolutely wonderful. I liked watching that floor. That was pretty cool.
Hey,
and a lot of happy faces out there, too. Is it you or is it somebody else?
It's got to be somebody else.
Absolutely. My God. All right, you listeners out there, do not go away. We're going to wrap it up on the other side. You know that. And if I see that you're going away, I will call you out. Thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Industrial Talk Podcast Network.
All right. Again, thank you very much for joining the Industrial Talk Podcast. That is Andy McCartney, president of Bowden Manufacturing. He definitely brings the passion to that interview. Incredible conversation. It's a wonderful way to celebrate Team Bowden Manufacturing. And so once again, I ask you, why aren't you involved with the Heroes of Manufacturing movement? Go out to heroesofmanufacturing.com. And I guarantee you have somebody to nominate that we want to celebrate on this particular platform. If you don't, which you do, I know you do, if you don't, still get involved. The women and men of manufacturing have just been so incredibly, resilient throughout all of this
challenging world we live in. COVID, next normal, whatever, and where is it going? The bottom line, you got to celebrate. They have a story to tell, and they are doing everything they can to make our lives better, even transitioning to this next normal. So go out to heroesofmanufacturing.com and find out more. All right, again, I am going to challenge you this week. And I'm going to challenge you over and over again. You need to collaborate, you need to innovate, and you need to educate, and you need to do it with a sense of speed. So we want you to, you know, we want you to survive, rebuild, as well as prosper. All right, be bold, be brave, dare greatly, change the world. We will be back again later.